the high school, finishing a little bit earlier than we all expected. Our apologies, I'll start reading the ones I know. The one is the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini, who is a long-standing medical apology with us. And then we also have the Honourable Mabasa, who has taken leave, actually taken leave, as we learned. And then we have the Honourable Salah, who has also put in an apology, and the Honourable Anton Elberts. So those are our apologies. So and we do have Becky, Honourable Hadebi here as well. Fine, thank you. I must say, broadly speaking, everyone conducted themselves properly in the house today, but not that the houses are a priority right now, is it? But I think that it would be well to remember, and I say this because this is the Portfolio Committee, that the first private member's bill under the current processes and dispensation was introduced here, and one hopes that the rest will be given the same kind of processes. Thank you. Welcome to the DDG, Ms. Ntuli. I don't see the Chief Director here, Advocate Stridham. Of course, all of the directors, deputy directors, Ms. Makaipa, Mr. Mavutuga, Mr. Masha Maite, Mvulani, an intern, Shake, an intern, Labotse, an intern, and Mr. Sapela, right, and of course, Mr. Hercules, the Office of the State Law Advisor. Thank you. And we never seem to remember Ms. Naidu, but thank you. Have someone to adopt the agenda proposed by Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Waili. And we immediately, now there should be no preambles, we go straight into yourself, DTI, as we move through the latest document. And I think it would be advisable for us to look at the purple first, you know, and then just to streamline the process after that. So, Honourable Hill Lewis, I was alerted to an email you sent to me by the Secretary, as you quite rightly should, and I see it's to do with the wording of 8 and 2, the amendment that you are proposing. That amendment won't be put into nuts. Now, I'm saying this purely for process, you know, time and process per se. We want to get this ready for CREDA. Of course, if you insist, you're quite entitled to put it through tonight. Would you like to? I don't think that's the point at all. We're still discussing it. So, yes, no. You see, when we take these final decisions, I always make sure we've got a majority. As you've now realized, Honourable Hill Lewis. But that's why I'm asking you if you'd rather wait.
Look, Chair, I mean, we've spent enough time debating that particular point, so the committee must take a view, and I think it can be a two-minute exercise, so we may as well get on with it.
The only reason, it's in your own interest, actually, now I'm speaking as Chair, that if you put it in later, you can carry it through to also, you know, you have the opportunity to comment. Supposing you say no to it, or qualified yes, and your point, you can then note that. So, you should be aware of that before you take this decision. So, yes, we can do it tonight and dispose of it. How do you want to treat it tonight? No, it's fine. That is your decision.
Yeah, let's do it tonight. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, Honourable McIntosh.
I do need to leave just before 6. I don't know if that's going to complicate issues in terms of if you're wanting to make any decisions. That's what I mean.
We are doing the processes again tomorrow. Is that not correct, Mr. Hermans? I'm just checking with you with all these changes to the programme.
Chair, the intention to finalise the A-bill and try to fix it and clean
tonight.
It up tonight. Then the idea would be for us to get a cleaner process done before the committee then will actually sit and formally consider each clause. It would be better if members then move their particular amendments during that particular process, because if, for instance, an amendment that may be moved is not accepted, it can be noted in the report of the committee that the following amendments was rejected or agreed to by the committee. At this that process, we're not at that stage, the formal stage of the deliberations, considering the bill, which will then, where the matter may not be recorded in the minutes, but not in the report. It can still be in the report, included in the report. But the idea is to have an almost clean bill where you then move each amendment and then members can move.
Put the full amendment
or forward
in, that's
amendment.
What I'm saying. In your own shoes, I would do it the other way. But I'm not in your shoes. Over to you, DTI.
Good afternoon, honourable members. Always a pleasure to be in here. Chair, we will start with the approach that you've alluded to. Advocate Stradom will take us through the document, and we must apologise that it's not in blue. The pink has nothing to do with anything except my phone. So we're just aligning with the colours around. Chair, I must apologise that the Chief Director had to go back yesterday to the office to attend to some of our operational staff at the office. So he won't be here today, but we've got Advocate Stradom here, and the team is here to also assist. So I'll just hand over to him, and Stradom, he will take us through.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we informally, just before the proceedings commenced, discussed the advisability as to how we should move on the A-list now. We've been on this A-list for quite a while, and we have in fair detail dealt with just about the essence of whatever we're having in this A-list. Unfortunately, if we simply reflect on the colour now, as it appears in the A-list, it seems as if there are still many matters coming to the fore, but that creates the wrong impression altogether. I would suggest that more than 80% of what we're finding still in pink in the A-list is not contentious, have to a large extent been agreed upon, but they are strictly speaking new in the sense that they were not part of the A-list during yesterday's meeting. So, Madam Chair, this time around I'm in your hands. Just be so kind to give us guidance as to whether you would like me to almost literally line by line or item by item refer to them all, or maybe adopt a bit more of a pragmatic approach and deal with maybe some of them collectively and some of them just very briefly by way of reference, and then in fairness to the committee make a point of indicating the few amendments in here that are still of a rather substantive nature, Madam Chair. We would not mind whatever approach you adopt.
Right, members, can you take out the amendment bill that looks like this? And as we get to the particular relevant areas, Advocate Stradom will allude to it and refer to it. Is that everyone on target? Has everyone got this? Right. Then Let's move with yourselves then on this one, clause one. I have to go that way then if that's the way you're doing it. Anything on clause two, because I'm now looking at this one.
Thanks a lot for that, Madam
Or do you
Chair.
Want the page
may, may I then take us just back to clause one, Madam Chair,
yes.
Because there is indeed something rather substantive on clause one. That is, on the A list, page one of the A list, not the bill, it's clause one, it is that portion there in pink. You will recall the discussion that we've had on the definition of the agency, that the current definition in the Principal Act should be amended to properly reflect the new status of the agency. And there it is, Madam Chair. It would read, I'm going to read it as it would read after the amendment. Distributing agency means an agency appointed by the Minister in terms of Section 26A, read together with Section 26B sub 3 of this Act. Here is the disqualification, but not any department in the national or a provincial sphere of government. That portion in the current Act is retained to make it clear that no government department, be it national or provincial, will perform the functions that will be performed by a distributing agency. That is the only one on clause one, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ben. No one has a problem. I don't see a hand up, we move. Right, then let's go to clause two. Nothing there. Clause three, clause four. Are we just going systematically with this particular one? Clause four. Because remember, some people want to actually refer to an amendment or something like that. Clause four. Clause five. And you remember under clause four, we substituted the word invite on page three. On page three, line 40. Do you remember that issue? Rather than solicit. Okay, you see, make sure everything's clear so that when we get to the creda, you've got all your notes. All right? And then we get to clause four still. There are quite a few little ones here. Renewable term, page four, line not exceeding 5 years, and to substitute term of 5 years, which may be renewed. That was something a member here proposed. I'm not sure who, line 10. Was it yourself, Jordan Hilders? Clean-up approach. It's just a clean-up. I'm just pointing this out. Some of you weren't here. Page 5, what did I say then? Clause 4. But now we're looking at, on the same page 4, nothing else on page 4. On page 5, and that is 2E there, page 5, line 22, to admit minister and to substitute board. Do you see that there? Please do these changes now because, you know, when you face the creda and passing, you don't want to pass something you don't agree with. Now's your opportunity to do all that. Right, on page 5, line 54. Line 54, admit minister and. Okay, everyone on board? Page 5, line 54. Right. On page 5, line 57, to admit minister after consultation with the. I'm dealing with the ones that don't require the explanation from DTI. I hope that's clear. Am I right? If you think that it requires explanation, you go ahead.
If I can just in fairness say this, all these amendments that we're finding here, like the whole list of them, we've referred to that flow chart on the process, to the minister, to the commission, to the board, the interfunctioning between those functionaries, how it should be conducted in future, and all these amendments are subsequent or pursuant to the discussions that we've had in that regard, also referring to the organogram. These are all consequential to those discussions, Madam Chair.
Minister, after consultation with the Minister, after consultation with the right, and then you've got 58 to 59, page 5, to omit in consultation with the board in the case of a person appointed by the commissioner. That is line 58 to 59. Right, to omit and consult in the case of the person of the commissioner. Right, page 6, line 10, omit minister. This is in line with our deliberations. DTI have simply complied. Page 6, line 10, we said that. Page 6, line 8, I should have said minister, omit that. Page 6, in line 10, to omit, as the case may be, after consultation. Can you see that? Is everyone on board with the minister? Everyone? Page 6 in line 14, minister, omit. Page 6 from line 14, omit as the case may be. We've got that again, it seems. Right. And then page 618 to omit minister. All of these are just consequential, but members have got to note them, because when they do the passing of this, you appreciate, Advocate Stratum, we don't want slip-ups along the line. 32, a midlife partner. Now, can you talk to that?
Madam Chair, that is a substantive.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, can you talk to that?
I think it was the Honourable Khadebe and myself that had made unfortunate remarks during a meeting in respect of a life partner. Madam Chair, this amendment proposes the omission of the words life partner from the context of what we're having there in the bill. Now, if we recall what it relates to, this is where the Honourable Khadebe has been a member, and there was adjudication on grants, and after that, for a period of 24 months, the Honourable Khadebe, or possibly his spouse, wife, or a life partner, would become an employee of a company that had received a grant from the lottery. Then that person, if it's the wife, if it's the spouse, that person is precluded from becoming an employee of the person that had received the grant. Now we are saying that life partner should be taken out. I did not have the opportunity to speak even to our DG as far as that is concerned, but we must raise it in fairness to the The question, Madam Chair, is what is the rationale or what is the basis for the distinction between a spouse or a life partner? And I don't want to elaborate much, but after what the Honourable Khadebe requested us to do, I had a look at the Pension Funds Act, and here is the definition of a spouse. Advocate Hercules has indicated to me that the same kind of thing is to be found in the Medical Aids Act, if that's the right terminology. Here is the definition of a spouse in the Pension Funds Act. Means a person who is the permanent life partner, or spouse, or civil union partner of a member in accordance with the Marriage Act, the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, or the Civil Union Act, or even the tenets of a religion. That's all that I'm putting to the committee, Madam Chair. We are proposing this amendment, but what should be decided upon is there really a basis for distinguishing between a spouse and a life partner? So in my unfortunate example of a while ago, if that lady is the life partner of the Honourable Khadebe, this preclusion would not apply. Whereas if the lady is the wife or the spouse, this preclusion would apply.
Chair, could you read that definition to us again, Chair?
A spouse means, I personally can't recall getting something that looks like this. No. I don't have it in my documents, but I often don't get any documents. That's hardly an unusual thing. See, it needs to come here first. Now, I don't know how often I've said this. And it wasn't put on my desk.
Sorry, Madam Chair. In fact, we did make it available, but about 2 or 3 meetings ago. And then in that meeting, we never referred to the document. Apologies, Madam Chair.
You see, if I don't see this, I've not seen this in my email. I haven't. That's a fact. I've not seen it in any other form. Now, sometimes people have put things in front of my desk and say, we gave it to you, but they haven't given. Now, I must stress this, because this has actually led to the recall of a report on an ATC, that I haven't received something, and I want everyone to know. It comes here first. To me, then it goes elsewhere. I think that's got to be we must all respect these protocols, or in fact the procedures of Parliament and processes. I think that I see Mr. Hercules nodding away, advocate, means a spouse who is the permanent life partner or spouse who is the permanent life partner or spouse or civil union. So spouse covers life partner for whatever that is. And presumably a life partner then is 1 year, is it? Is it defined anywhere? Is a life partner 1 year or 2 years or 5 years? That's what I want to know.
Madam Chair, I've also referred to those other acts. And nowhere there would you find a saying that if I had lived with a lady for 3 years, she had become my life partner. It is a matter of fact and circumstance. If the lady can say that she had been living with me for 4 years in the same house, in a loving kind of relationship, having shared the same kind of amenities, then she will convince the registrar of pensions that she should benefit from my pension fund. So that becomes a matter of fact.
If the people are not living together permanently, but have this relationship, then they're not life partners. Yeah, to me that's a bit of a concern. As I know many relationships who have Italian marriages, and it amounts to that sort of relationship. So here, everyone, see everyone laughing. We know it exists right here in Cape Town. We don't live together. You spend weekends and a couple of holidays together, but you life partners. You are life partners. I want to know how often I see my husband.
Madam Chair?
Sorry, ma'am.
Madam Chair, I don't think we must get completely hung up on this issue. I mean, it's a very interesting phenomenon, although it's something that should be under the Marriage Act or something. But just today, I happened to look at my bank, FNB, and they said, do you cohabit? And they say, if you don't have an agreement as a cohabiting person, if you live with them, then you're in a very difficult legal position in terms of pension and everything else. And the bank suggests you regularize a cohabitation or a cohabiting. So maybe that's a route to consider.
I'm looking at this because it is a bill. And life partner, I see here, and I am looking at this, and certainly we respect the point that is made, means a person who is a permanent life partner or spouse. So we won't go into the broader explanation you've given, Advocate Striden, which talks about this, you know, permanently living together, because most people are not capable of living together these days with their work. You know, that's a reality. I think only of the migrants who have this problem. Many people here in Parliament have that self-same problem. So let us, we may want to just leave it as you say, because it says here, where does this come from? Statutes. And let them fight it out as to what it means. You happy with that, Honourable Khadebi? I'm checking because Honourable Khadebi first raised it, and he's nodding that he's now reassured all is on track. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I think Honourable Khadebi was quite right to raise it. As we know, this has been actually the core issue in a recent ethics investigation. And I think it's crucial to get it right. Can I make a suggestion that we omit the word life and replace it with the word cohabiting?
I don't want to go down a legal route. Believe you me, I don't. Because once we go down the legal route, we're going to have to tie it up in a number of other ways, you see. But it says there, this is a statute, and it says a spouse is a life partner. Do you follow? Now, the rest of it is for another debate, if you like. But we're looking at the statute and we're saying a life partner has been interpreted under statute as a spouse. Do you see? That's how we're looking at it. And we're not talking about, are you living together 200 days a year or not? Do you know what I mean? That we're not going there. Okay, can we leave it there then? And do it a little bit of a chop, which I seldom do. But that's where we're leaving it. And I'm glad you did raise it and enlighten us, because that is a point to take account of. Thank you. Honourable.
Just maybe wanted some clarity in terms of the question that you posed earlier on. You know, you spoke about Italian marriages and so on. How do we propose, and I know you said you're not going the legal route, but we, currently then, as I understand, we're leaving it very broad, the definition being very broad. So are you saying that we leave that to the legal experts to come back and to fine-tune that? Or what is it that you are recommending?
You see, when it's in statute, it is legal. If it's in statute, would you like to clarify that, Advocate here?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I want to agree with Advocate Stadum's reference to the Pensions Funds Act, where statute has given effect to the recognition of a life partner being also regarded as a spouse for all purposes. Although there's no specific legislation like the Civil Unions Act, which actually makes provision for partnership, a civil union partnership as such, or people who are who entered into a civil union for the purpose of that act. But in terms of life partner, it's been recognized. And with regard to the years or the duration of that partnership, the courts have given has given a direction or interpretation to it. It depends on the facts and depends on all the circumstances, but recognition has been given to it. There are remedies in our law available to life partners for that matter. In respect of unjustified enrichment, various other areas of law. So it is recognized as such. Thank you, Chair.
I am comfortably reassured on that one. Honourable Hill.
Chair, on the same clause, the advocate was saying that it makes reference to payment of a grant. Is that referring to another clause? I don't know if I'm lost now. This is someone who's applying for a license to operate.
Madam Chair, in the bill, page 6 of the bill, line 32. The commissioner or any employee or his or her spouse, life partner, immediate family member, and the rest may not during the time of his or her employment at the commission or a period of 24 months thereafter take up employment with any person having received a grant from the lottery. This exclusion is in respect of that scenario. The amendment is proposing an amendment to this provision that I've just referred to.
We're on this.
The Chair, but that's not what that clause says.
And then we're on page 6, line 32. It's what it says here. The commissioner or any employee or his or her spouse, immediate family member or business, that's what I'm reading from.
Yeah.
Right.
Read on.
Family member or business partner or associate may not during the time of his or her employment at the commission or for a period of 24 months after the termination or expiry of such membership take up employment or in any way receive any benefit from any person who intends to apply or has applied in terms of section 13 for a license to conduct the national lottery.
Oh, that's what mine says.
You said you didn't have the right one.
No, but that's not what the advocate just read.
He did.
No, I promise you he didn't.
Pardon,
anyone who has applied for or received a grant from the National Lottery.
Yeah, what I haven't done, I did not read the whole provision. But I mean, we can read it. There it is. Definitely, it is the new clause 2 capital G, the whole subsection 2.
We are all on the same page. Just goes to show you where life partners can take you. Let's just move in the right direction now and leave our life partners out of it. Right. So if we can now move properly. On page 6, to omit line 39, the whole of line 39, and to substitute the board shall. 3 is a reference to the act, is it, or something? Line 39. The board shall. Oh, it is 3 here. And then you want us to add shall. Is that right?
Chair,
yes?
I'm really sorry. I'm clearly not making myself very clear. What I'm saying is that the advocate made reference to anyone who has applied for or received a grant from the National Lottery. And I'm saying it should include that, but it doesn't. Because this clause refers to anyone who's applied for a license.
All right. Let's just hear what Advocate Stradham is saying.
What the Honourable Lewis is in effect saying is that this is not wide enough. It should be broadened. Also to encompass what you've just suggested.
No, he isn't saying that at all.
Oh.
Because I thought you said the advocate said grant, and now he's saying license.
I'm saying it was a very good suggestion to include grants, but it doesn't currently say that, and I propose it should.
Well, look, may I just suggest this wasn't read from here then, because the word grant is not here. Are you proposing that as an amendment?
It would be audacious on my part to propose it as an amendment, Madam Chair. If as a consideration of policy, this Honourable Committee would feel that it's advisable to do so, I don't know whether the DDG might have a view on that, but I hear clearly what the Honourable Hillgoes is saying, that this should maybe refer specifically to the receipt of a grant as well. That's not for me, with respect, Madam Chair, to pronounce on.
The Honourable Hill Lewis is saying he thought he heard you say that. And so possibly you may have made a mistake, did you make a mistake? Because, what?
Madam Chair, I am just a very fallible human being, and I make I often make mistakes. And in trying to illustrate the principle, I referred to almost like an hypothetical example and included the word grant. I agree, but it is not in the text of the bill.
Then that's a whole new ball game. So are you proposing we now include it there? Where?
The restraint should include that the commissioner cannot be employed or receive any benefit from someone who is applying for a license to operate the National Lotto, or from anyone who has received a grant from the National Lotto. That's a clear conflict of interest, and I think it should be included.
Section, because it's now a proposed amendment. Honourable Sir David?
Chairperson, if you can look, previously we had such a problem where a person who was in charge of the lottery went and worked for the other company which was bidding. I think that there must be some sort of a restriction of in trade there. We must have some sort of a restriction. But then to extend it to imply, I think that the person who's at the top is the commissioner, to extend it to the ordinary employees of the commission. I think that's where the limitation are, like, if it can be limited to the commissioner, because really you cannot penalize for someone for working in a particular institution. But for the commissioner, yes, there must be some restriction. Thank you.
Well, you see, this implies something more than just adding the word or a grant, because you've got the commissioner or an employee or that. So you've got all of that. So now you're actually asking for the restriction for the commissioner to be exactly as is, but also include or a grant, but for the employee and his or her spouse, it should not apply, the word grant. That's quite a serious change there, you know, to involve another clause. No, the principle. Honourable Mackey.
Madam Chair, with respect to Honourable Hill Lewis, who I think makes a great contribution to this committee, I think he's taken a red herring as a result of the advocate slip of the tongue. Paragraph 2 is a restraint of trade. It's helpful that the Honourable Khadebe has given us the background to it, because it's an attempt to deal with a situation that happened, and restraint of trade is the standard thing. Now, the question of then saying, well, somebody's received a grant, may not be involved in the license application. They may have applied for a grant, for a bona fide. An individual wouldn't have. It would, in any event, be a juristic person which would have applied for a grant. So I just think that that Honourable Hill Lewis is suddenly rushing after a hare which has crossed our path in by the slip of the tongue, and I think he should drop it. I think he should drop it.
It does seem like a hare to me, you know. But let's hear Honourable Khadebe's input here. You see now, slips of the tongue. Right.
Comrade Chair, I think that, let us stick to that. That one, that two, will be a standalone section, whatever. So we need another one under that, that only refers to the restraint of trade to the commissioner. Because what can happen? A commissioner can ensure that a company or a certain thing he's going to work on gets a massive amount of money, and then he goes, and, you know, it's just like javelin throw. He goes and pick up on the other side. I think that restraint must be there for the commissioner only. So it does not include now the spouse, the employees, and all those people.
What I said, we are proposing a second amendment here, entirely on its own. You've got two, and then you're going to have three, or whatever, the way you want to deal with it. It seems that the committee, notwithstanding the introduction of a hare, is at one. Honourable Van der Merwe.
First of all, let me apologise profusely for coming late. I was summoned by the Chief Whip. Principal's office. I got a caning No. I think we need to put it simply. What the restraint of trade is trying to say is anybody who works there or their families can't, for while they're working and for 2 years afterwards, 24 months? For 2 years afterwards, they can't actually be involved in applying for a license. That's what it's saying. But to say that anybody who's working there, plus their wife and their children and their life partner, can't apply for a grant, can't be associated, that's what it says, associated with anybody applying for a grant for 2 years afterwards, I think we're getting ourselves into a little mix here.
One step back, Honourable Vandermeer, that is what it sounded like. Now, hang on, let me finish. And then we proposed that this would only be reserved for the commissioner, not everyone, and that it would be a stand-alone. So as this stands here, you don't add grant. You don't. Stands as is. All right? Then there is another clause, subclause, which does introduce a stricter, constraint for the commissioner, where the word grant does come, because we've heard of the example, someone possibly through the facilitation of the commissioner, an institution gets this grant, and then the commissioner does go and work there afterwards. So that is where that comes from. So now, do come.
Sorry, the point I was also trying to make, although it's a slightly different point, I will acknowledge, is that if you've got a bad commissioner and he's going to go and apply for a grant afterwards and you prevent him from doing that for 2 years, he will just use his wife to do it. You know, you can't make it the one person then if you're going to make an exclusion in this regard, because he'll have his kid or his wife or whatever doing the bad thing. We're obviously trying to prevent people from doing bad things, you know. I'm trying to make it as simplistic as possible. So it's a difficult conundrum.
Here one is coming from, of course, it wasn't so much the apply for the grant as where the grant had been already granted, I think. But I would like to get off here, because it does seem as if we're going down a side track here. Honourable Hadebi.
When the commissioner is no longer part of the commission, when he's no longer part of the only thing we are going to fight here is that he cannot be part of the process of the approval of these things, and then at the end of the day he goes javelin throw. But let's say he's no longer part of the commission. He's an ordinary South African. He's an ordinary South African. I think there must be this restraint of 2 years that he must not apply for that for the next 2 years. Because it's got that influence within the commission. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Look, at the end of the day, you're quite right. If you're that crooked, you're always going to beat the system. But we do have to put, a few hurdles or barriers up, Honourable James.
No, I just speak. I think it's a very wise thing that's being proposed here, and I support it. You can only go so far in terms of the kind of constraints you place. And so we know it's limited, but it is important. And so the constraints should be placed in the commissioner in the way that we're suggesting. I think it's a very wise thing to do.
So far, we're not doing the vote, of course, but we're saying if that's how we would like you to draft something. Advocate Stridham, okay, thank you. Yes, Honourable Hill-Lew.
Chair, still on the same clause, but just to go back a few points, on page 4, line 10, we made that phrasing amendment there in line 10.
Yeah,
I just wanted to check what the word agreed means, because the clause now reads an agreed term of 5 years. But if it stipulates the term is 5 years, then what is the word agreed there? Can they negotiate a shorter term, or What do we mean by agreed?
Madam Chair, can I just make sure about the locality of that amendment? Is that on page 2 of the A list, item 7?
Page 2, item 7.
That is on page 4 of our bill. Let's reflect it on the bill itself. I've marked it here on my text. It's in line 10. So if we omit those words, it would read like this. Holds office for an agreed term of 5 years, which may be renewed for another 5 years. Once. Is the word agreed problematic?
Just checking what it means.
Context.
If
agreed by way of contractual arrangement in making the appointment.
All right. Now we definitely are going forward. All right. Now, I was on page 6, clause 5.
On the A list, page 2, just want to draw the committee's attention to just a correction. On page 2 of the A list, item 10, under the new subsection 2C1, paragraph A, I propose that the paragraph should read as follows. He or she becomes disqualified in terms of section 2E, and stop there because the commissioner is not appointed as a member, but it's basically just disqualification in terms of the office, holding office as a commissioner. So the words from being appointed as a member should be deleted from there.
Madam Chair, I'm offering apologies. Amendment. Okay. Madam Chair, as we're working on this document, I get input coming from here and there and the other, and I try to consolidate everything. That has already been taken care of, what my colleague has just indicated. Those words had already been omitted from the text. I apologize to my colleague and to the committee for that, Madam Chair. No, Madam Chair, you've got the latest list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, it's only our advocate Hercules that doesn't, right. 3, page 3, yeah. Now, page 3, you see, Honourable Venomova, I can't see you, you know, so I have to wait for you to talk. A very awkward position for me, that one.
I just don't know what we're omitting. You've got to admit, line 22 and 23.
If I may give a specific reference, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
If we go to page 2 of our A list, it's item 10, and then there's paragraph small a in brackets. He or she becomes disqualified in terms of section 2E. Unfortunately, I haven't got my previous text with me. If Advocate Hercules would be so kind just to feed us the words that have been omitted from yesterday's text.
We'll go a bit slower because we don't want to go backwards now. So we're going to be on, we're on page 3 of the A list. The new A list, we're on page. We were on page 6 then. The bill here, and right, page 6 of the bill, and on page. I'm just looking. We've done that one. Clause 5 we didn't do, line 51. Yeah, no, that's fine. Page 7, we're also okay with that. Right, nothing came up. Page, hang on, what's happened here? Just a minute. after line 42. That is not new. We dealt with that yesterday. So we then ask on page 9. On page 9, clause 10.
If I may, Madam Chair.
Yes.
We need to point out here, clause 10 of the A-list, bottom page 3, item 1. On page 9 of the bill, from line 37 to line 48, the omission of paragraphs Q, R, and S. Allow me briefly, if we refer to what is in Q and R, we will clearly see that those are not functions of the board that we're talking about here in this context. Those are functions by the Commission, and in fact they are already in Clause 4 of the bill. The very, very same kind of wording as well. So this is in a sense repetitive, but not only repetitive, but the functions are with the wrong body in that it is with the board. That is why the proposal that paragraphs Q and R be omitted from the text here, and also just below that, paragraph S. This is the power to prohibit or to withdraw a grant after it had been made. We will recall from yesterday's discussion, it's not a board function. We will get later to a substantive amendment in pink in here. That power is a ministerial power. The board can only make a recommendation. So clearly paragraph S should be omitted from the text.
Remember that and recall that that was the result of our deliberations and members making an input then. Yes, Honourable.
Chair, that wasn't the result of our deliberations. We said, if you look at yesterday's A-list, the amendment was to remove the phrase have the power and to replace it with recommend to the minister. And that's what we agreed to.
I think what Advocate Stridham is saying, that is taken into account. They did indicate yesterday that they would review that under 30 or 31, whatever that clause was, don't you recall? So this is what they are proposing today. Do you want to hear what that is saying to feel reassured? We can just nip to the end there.
Madam Chair, if I can very briefly refer to, if we reflect on page 11 of the A-list, today's A-list, at the bottom of the page, section 33, the ministers shall at any time and the rest, and then we have B, C and D, and then on the next page, 12, prohibit, withdraw or reduce any such grant and may impose any conditions. And earlier on, we will also see in there that this is done by the minister on the recommendation of the board. So the board can do no more but to recommend, but the power to actually do so is a ministerial power.
Well, Hill Lewis, so you see, that took into account the deliberations, so we have no problem now. Coming back to where we were.
Madam Chair, allow me just to refer to item 2 under clause 10 of our A-list as well. On page 9, from line 51, to omit paragraph U. If we read paragraph U, the same principle applies. These functions are not functions of the board. They are already there in clause 4 of this bill. These are functions attributed to the Commission, and they should be omitted from the functions of the board. That is all that I... And if I can, in the same vein and breath, Madam Chair, just run over to page 4 of the A-list and refer to another substantive amendment. Page 4 of the A-list is not subsection 3, 4. It is subsection 5, just below that. The board may recommend to the minister to prohibit, withdraw, or reduce any grant made by the agency if the board receives information that such grant is utilized as in A or is utilized as in B, and this is new, C now. If such grant was applied for in a misleading or fraudulent manner. The DGG earlier this morning indicated to us that what we're having in A and B might not, ironically, not include fraudulent behavior, because they specifically relate to the utilization of the funds. And that might not be fraudulent. So it's necessary to specifically say that for a grant that was made misleading or in a fraudulent manner. That is new, Madam Chair. It was not part of the discussion yesterday.
All right, let's just look at it. Takes account of some of the earlier points that, as you say, we're in the wrong, possibly in the wrong place. But this is what was agreed on in committee. Thank you for that. Right. We're still on page 10. So we go to clause 12. Right. And then clause 13. Right.
Yeah.
Yes?
I'm on page 4 of the A.
Yeah. Yeah, Chair, this is where those questions that I sent to you today become relevant. It's not an amendment. I'm just concerned about section 13A subsection 4. And I sent you those.
That's page 11 of this bill, isn't it, here?
No, page 10.
All right, 13A.
Sub 4.
Sub 4, okay.
I don't know if the department's had a chance to consider my question.
I need to see it here. I've seen this here, but no, we haven't given it to the department yet, because here the amendment would be section 14A1.
No, this is not to do with the amendment. These are just questions that I have.
Oh, questions. My apologies to you.
Yeah.
All right, raise your question.
Thanks very much. My questions relate to the way that a third party is licensed to conduct the lottery on behalf of the organ of state in subsection 4 of 13A. I don't mind if I can email these. I'm sorry that I didn't email these to you earlier, but I don't have your email address. But perhaps I can email them and they can come back tomorrow with answers, because I don't want to put them on the spot with four questions now.
No. Ask your question, because then that way they'll be able to deal with them as well. What is the question? The first one, it's right, it is here. Your question here is what the committee secretary is now showing me. What is the process to be followed?
So my first question is, what is the process to be followed for the licensing of that third party once the license has been issued to a state organ? I just feel that there might be a need to set out the process to be followed, because there's very little difference between the licensing of this third party and the normal licensing of a third party, as in section 13. So if you can just set out the process to be followed there, and perhaps comment on whether we should set out that process here, or just simply refer to the process followed in whatever, I'll leave that to you. Then the second question is, what will happen to the revenue generated by the state organ in the event it is licensed to conduct the lottery? How will this revenue be split? And related to that, what will happen to the revenue if it's what I've called here in my question sublicensed to a third party, as in subsection 4? And then lastly, how will the state organ be established? How will it be funded? And who will head it, and how will that person be appointed?
Issues you did raise to some extent yesterday. Because when you spoke about the issuing of the license, you said, what process is there to be followed? That's what I've got down here. erase that then, what process will be followed if that is done, you see?
Yeah, but Chair, it was a rhetorical, I didn't get an answer yesterday, that's why...
No, I'm saying the question was raised yesterday. Therefore, any question raised, they will, apply their minds to. It's a question that was raised in committee. And then you pointed out, if indeed this sort of thing did happen in any event, we certainly needed to know about that. You didn't add the phrase about there being little difference between that, a license, because what was clear is that the committee did discuss the issue of 8 years, for example, being what was in the Principal Act, what is now here, and would we grant it to someone else, and why not the state organ? We spent a lot of time on that particular issue. I'm not saying it's been responded to here. I'm saying this was raised. What will happen to the revenue? That was never raised. Now, that's brand new. You see, I like to note the ones which are coming here for the first time. How will the state organ be established? How will it be funded? Those are the two that were never raised yesterday. The other one was.
Yeah.
You said, will this be in regulations or how will it come up? So you did raise that as a concern. But I would like you to raise the ones here and see if the department is able to respond to the new issue, which is what will happen to the revenue generated by the state organ. That's new, the question.
Yeah, Chair, all of them are actually new because they haven't, we didn't discuss it yesterday. We didn't get any reply. But, Chair, I appreciate that these are quite complex questions, which is why I feel bad putting the department on the spot with them now and why I'm happy for them to think about them for a bit and get back to us. But, of course, that's up to you. But I don't want to muddy the water with my amendment because this is, I'm assuming, for matter of argument, that the state can license a state organ for the matter of, just for the sake of argument. And my questions are, in that case, we need to know a little bit more about how that's going to work. And that's what these questions set out. So this is not the 8 and 2 yet. I'll deal with that when we get to the ABLE.
Right. I am going to insist that the issue of that was raised yesterday, point one. The fact that you weren't responded to is another issue. It was raised. So let's not go round in circles now. Number 2 and 3 are brand new. And so when it comes to the one, the issue was where would this be? The second one then, and the third, you would want to apply your mind to and to come back here on Friday with a response. So from our side, I think from the committee side, we deliberated on this issue about licensing of a third party per se. It would be treated in the same manner, bar the proviso that there would be dispensation of something or other, I forget what it was offhand, but that would not apply to a state organ. For the rest of the issues they would apply, I'd just like to clarify that.
Chair, yes, we did indicate that the same conditions, requirements would be applicable, but Chair, like you said, would require some time to respond to the follow-up questions. I think the questions were raised, but I think yesterday the main issue was the fact that we had never made a case for this in the beginning, and that's what we tried to then explain. And I think now that we've passed that stage, I think the next step was, so how will it look like? So we will respond to that then tomorrow.
Okay. And do you have this? Right, fine. So you do have something right now. Thank you. Did you send this to Mr. Hermans?
I did.
Right. Because Mr. Hermans will also email it to the department. Makes it easier.
If I can just advise the DDG, please ignore the amendment at the top because that will come in the ABLE. And as you just said, the follow-up questions are assuming that it's as in the bill.
Yeah, I think that you appreciate. We're not looking at what I call A. We're looking at the B.
Yeah.
Shall we leave that for the moment? Pass on that one? Now, we do want this tomorrow morning early because we're moving towards a really serious issue of fine-tuning the A and B here. All right. So, having looked at that, where are we now? Clause 12, clause 13, page 10, and then we move to page 5 of the A list. Page 5 of the A list, and there we've dealt with that and the temporary license, and so we then move to clause. All of that there, I'm just looking at this 12 and 13. We did have something on page 13. I don't know why I've just made a note here. 22. On page 13, 53 to 55. Right. So we then look at clause 22, page 13, 53 to 55. Over to the Advocate Strutt.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I do not even want to raise anything in respect of clause 22. That is only the sequence of words there that we've thoroughly discussed that, considered, evaluated, and adjudicated. It is a matter that we dealt with yesterday. The next issue that I would like to raise, with your permission, in fairness to the committee, is in respect of clause 24. Madam Chair, when we get there.
All right, so are we all on track then? Right, page 6, the A list. We're still there on track, if you recall. That was just the considered, evaluated, and adjudicated clause 24. And clause 24 is on page 14. Right. At one stage there we put new clause emit line on page 14, emit lines 14 to 19.
That's it, Madam Chair. Yes. If you would allow me to come in right
please
there.
Please do.
And just point this out clearly. That's item 2 of clause 24 on page 14 to omit lines 14 to 19, and we substitute the following. The agency shall be responsible for considering, evaluating, and adjudicating applications for grants or recommendations of funding of worthy good causes received from the Commission, and B, preparing reports on grants already awarded and on the performance of its functions to the Board on a quarterly basis or as and when requested by the Board. Just to make it very, very clear, what is the function as it relates to the agency. The only other thing I would like to point out in respect to the pink ones under clause 24, Madam Chair, is that proviso, just a bit lower down in subsection 2, provided that such number shall not exceed 9 in each category. That number relates to just 3 lines higher up in sub 2. The number of the agency members in each category shall be determined by the minister. But then there's the proviso. Not more than 9, that's the ceiling in respect of each category. Then I'm done on clause 24, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are we all on track there? Yeah, but it's great when everyone, you know, there's more than a consensus here. Almost, oh God, good. Right. No. We mustn't do that. Now, page 6. Page 7. We're on page 16.
Allow me, Madam Chair, on page 7 of the A list, just to point out a specific 2 amendments there. Page 7 of the A list, item 9, on page 16 of our bill, from line 3 to 11, to omit paragraphs B C, and D. Page 16 of the bill, starting from line 3, B, there we see in consultation with the minister, determine the monetary threshold in respect of applications or payments of grants. C, determine the period within which an application for grants should be finalized. And D, in consultation with the minister, determine any other process or monetary threshold. What we're saying here, if we read it, it relates to processes and thresholds and the rest. Those are the kind of things that we would like to see, not in the Principal Act, but in the regulations. So that is where they would be going, and we submit that we omit them from the text of the Principal Act here, Madam Chair. And the very same argument applies to item 12 on the same page of our Bill 16, from line 1023 to omit paragraph I. That last one there, page 16 of the bill, ensure that a simple and clear process or procedure, once again it relates to procedure, it's the kind of thing that you expect to see in the regulations. Madam Chair, I said a while ago that I was done on clause 24. I am now really done on clause 24.
Thank you. Page 7. Honourable Swing.
Sorry to kind of take you back, and it may just be that I'm a little tired and may have missed something. But on page 14, I just wanted to know whether the sequencing of the numbering is correct. At the top, it's got amendment of section 26. And then it goes to 23, section 26, and then the insertion of 26A, 26 to 26F, and then it goes to 24, and then it deals with distribution agent, distributing agencies, and then 26. The 24 there is what seems to be standing out for me. It's section 24.
No, yes, I see you're actually not half asleep or tired at all. Advocate Stridham, you're actually quite alert.
Madam Chair, if I'm not mistaken, I think this relates to, in the bills, we're referring to clauses. In the Principal Act, the current law, we're referring to sections.
Okay.
And sometimes you would find clause 15 in a bill amending section 18.
Okay.
So there's no correlation between the clauses and the sections in the bill as opposed to the Principal Act. And sometimes that creates that kind of confusion. I'm sorry, I'm not for a moment saying that you're confused. Not at all, I'm sorry.
Not at all. But I mean, the reality is it is confusing, of course. That is a reality. It's not a personal thing, it's facts. Right now, we're actually going back to 16. Right. And we were at the bottom here, as I saw it. We were on that 9, and we did all those omissions. And then, of course, on page 16, your point 13. From line 26 to mid 1, that's distributing agency, etc. That's still on track there. Line 26, that was agreed to yesterday, and I see it's there now. And again, the consider evaluate issue, page 8 of the A list, which takes us to, yeah.
Madam Chair, allow me. The Honourable Fring has, in this discussion, just indicate another omission on our part. There's a new section 26 capital G. If my colleagues will just make a note that there should actually be an amendment now on page 14 in line 4, because it ends
yes,
there with F, and the Honourable Member is quite right, it should go now to G. Then we will make the necessary amendment there.
So we're up.
I think it was that was bugging me.
Madam Chair, sorry for speaking so monotonous, but allow me immediately on page 8 just to refer to that pink portion right at the top there. This is new and it's substantive. A decision of the agency concerning an application for a grant is subject to review by the board. And here's the new portion. Only on application by an aggrieved applicant in the manner prescribed. The DDG spoke to us earlier this morning. We do not want any Tom, Dick and Harry to come around and to take the board on review for maybe having dealt with an application in an irregular manner. This is a right of review only in respect of an aggrieved applicant and nobody else. I'm done, Madam Chair.
Chairperson? Now, Chair, my notes reflect on 26F, page 16, line 30,
mm-hmm.
line 31.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid I can't exactly remember what we agreed, but I just note that I seem to recall that we asked the department to apply their minds to what good cause could mean and whether we could set that up.
Well, I've got here, there you're talking on page 16, of course, okay, and 31, we said we need to insert something possibly or review that. All right, what is it?
Madam Chair, we're quite aware of this one, and we did discuss. I hope that the explanation would be satisfactory. Unlike in that other part of the bill, where we had dealt with justifiable grounds, where the minister, based on those grounds, would be in a position to say that I'm not prepared to appoint anybody to conduct the lottery, because these very specific justifiable grounds, or one of them, is in existence. Here, we're dealing with totally a different kind of scenario. And good cause in this sense is, yes, indeed, a very, very relative term. It can mean many things. But we think it would be ill-advised, with all due respect, to try and circumscribe or qualify what would be good causes. Because good causes for a school might be different to good causes for a sports club or to the next institution. So we would like to keep this as open as possible, even though it's relative, but there will be some exercise of the mind or discretion as to what, in a particular circumstance, would constitute a good cause. So if the Honourable Committee would be willing to accept that, and that we rather shy away from trying to circumscribe what a good cause can be, because there can be so many that is conceivable.
This was raised, of course, but I'm not sure that too many folks thought it was a challenge, but let's see now. Are all strings happy, yourself, Honourable Members?
Chair, you see, I thank the advocate for the explanation. I must say I struggle to even conceive of how it's going to be possible to show good cause. How do I show that I am incompetent to make an application, and so I've delegated that job to the Honourable Khadebe on my behalf? My concern is precisely that it is too difficult to show that. So my proposal is not to make it more difficult. My proposal is to set out a way in which you show how it's possible, because I find it really difficult to show. Essentially, what this clause requires is for me as an applicant to describe to the commission, to the adjudication, the distribution agency, why I am incompetent to make application myself. And so I have delegated that power to an agent on my behalf. And that's a difficult thing to show. That's my question. I can't really get my head around.
I wanted to suggest that let's leave that as is. It would be upon that person to then justify why he or she can't make, or that organization, why she can't make an application for himself or herself. And on the basis of that, then the distributing agency would then take a decision. Otherwise, if we want to then dissect good cause in the bill, or even in the regulations for that matter, we might just not be doing any good to the bill.
It's actually pointing to the person, the juristic person who's acting as an agent, in a position to show good cause, isn't it? Of any shall be considered unless good cause is shown. The person for whom you are acting, the potential beneficiary, is unable. I mean, that has been done all the time, that sort of thing. It's done even under elections, you know. I don't think it's too difficult, that one, myself. It hasn't used the word of unsound mind, you know, phrase, which may have taken us down another road. But, I don't know, you've said your piece, have you, Honourable Hill Lewis? Yes, indeed. And I think everyone, then, possibly others may not always not share your point on this occasion, that view of yours. Right.
The only qualification pairs we can think of, if need be, is where we say that the distribution agency might just want to verify the reason as advanced by the person.
Put that in regulations, presumably. I'm asking you, Honourable Babas.
Yes, we can. We would do so. Probably.
Would you be happy it went there, or you'd rather have it in the legislation itself here, in the first, in the bill?
If it goes into the bill, then I don't think it would do any harm. I'm just saying that if we really have a problem with this, maybe we should then add just that small writer to say that the distribution agency must then go ahead and go further and verify.
Okay, does the DTI have a view on that? A proposal could be in regulation, but perhaps in legislation itself.
The proposal obviously is a prohibition up front, and that for it to be considered, there must be good cause shown. That inherently means that there must be an assessment of those reasons provided. So reasons could differ from anything. It could be that an organization is just too small, it just started, but also there are other reasons why people use others. It's when they have defrauded others, somewhere in their financial statements are not in order, they go and get somebody else to apply on their behalf. So it could be a number of reasons. So that assessment will be done in this process. That is why it's a prohibition, and then it says only in exceptional circumstances, and this will be those circumstances when a good cause is shown. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. So now, members, and where we are now is looking at this. We're 16, we've done that there, clause 26, right at the end of page 8. Page 9 I'm looking at 9 of the A list, all right? The A list. But that was page 17 of the bill. Okay, page 17.
at page 17 from line 11 to 26, clause 27. There we are. Further down, really, you've only got that one which we went, what did you do? You've added it in here again, evaluate and adjudicate B.
Madam Chair, same sequence of those. I've got nothing to say, Madam Chair, we get to clause 31. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Page 10 is the same points again of the A list. Page 11, and let's get to page 18. All right. 18 at the bottom and going on into 19.
Please allow me, Madam Chair, there's a matter of substance here. Clause 31, existing clause 31 in the bill to be rejected. If we read that, we will see that the existing clause 31 makes provision for a very simple thing, which is the section 33 of the Principal Act to be repealed. This amendment rejects that clause and puts the following in its stead. The following section is hereby substituted for section 33 of the Principal Act. So it's no longer repealed, it is now amended. And here is the amendment. This is what we referred to a while ago, the ministerial power, which is not a power of the board. The minister shall at any time after receiving a recommendation from the board, or, importantly, the information should not be coming necessarily only from the board, from any other person, that the grant awarded by the distributing agency, pardon the wrong paragraph references, we start with B, I think the alphabet starts with A, should be A, B and C, so B is A, is utilized or is likely to be utilized in an unauthorized manner, B is utilized in such a manner, C is the one that we referred to earlier on, was applied for in a misleading or fraudulent manner. And here is the important part. What can the minister do? Prohibit, withdraw or reduce any such grant and may impose any such conditions that the minister considers appropriate. And unlike that little period that we had there, whether it should be 7 or 14, it's no longer part of the picture, because the minister can do this at any point in time, even long after the grant had been made. Why is it not conceivable that 2 years after a grant had been made, that it comes to the surface that the application was initially fraudulent? So there's a vast extension now of the ministerial power. I'm done on that part, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Well, look, it's early in the evening, of course, so I'm not too sure why I would require clarification. But I'm reading this here, power of the minister. I don't have a problem with substance, but how will it read? The minister shall do X and Y and Z, and then you've got straight into B is. How does it read on? It's 33. I'm just trying to take it across to 19 here. But actually, it's new. You're referring to the Principal Act, you see, specifically. So if you read that, the minister to prohibit, withdraw, or reduce. The minister shall at any time after receiving X, Y, Z, etc., from any other person. And then you go straight into is utilized. So where does the shall kick in again? The minister shall what? Shall prohibit on the next page there, withdraw or reduce. So it reads across to the next page then.
And
right.
Madam Chair, the intention is indeed that this, the exercise of this power should not be discretionary on the part of the minister. With respect, if this information is in existence, the minister must do the necessary.
I understand the necessity for that particular clause and the guidelines that are given to the minister, but just my concern with regards to the last clause on page 12, and may impose such conditions, the minister, any such conditions, the minister considers appropriate. Are those any such conditions in any way guided in terms of the law? You know, because any such conditions appears to be very, very broad for me. And what would those guidelines be in terms of the law?
My colleagues on the other side, they might rein me in, but clearly, as we discussed the other day, no ministerial power is exercised in a legal vacuum. What deems appropriate here does not mean in any way that the minister can literally do what he or she deems fit. That power or that discretion must be exercised against that section, I think 32 in the Constitution, that refers to fair and just and equitable administrative action on the part of political functionaries. So needless to say, we can rather, and it would become very, very cumbersome to in each and every statute that we have this kind of thing, that we codify the constitutional dictates in each and every act, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
I seem to recall we did discuss this, but I just wanted to check whether this clause empowers the minister to attempt to recover such funds.
Needless to say, apart from the statutory power, the minister would be entitled to rely on civil remedies of law as well, as it relates maybe to some claim for restitution of the money. It does not exclude any other civil remedy that the minister might have. This is a specific statutory power, but it is concomitant to other civil remedies that might be available.
Thank you.
I was just going to add as well to what Advocate Stratum was responding to Honourable Hill-Lewis's last question, to say it is also a function of the Commission to recover those withdrawn or prohibited grants. Thanks.
There we are. We're all on, it's one here. Thank you. All right. Now we come to page 12 of the A list, page 19 of the bill, clause 32.
Madam Chair, and hereafter my voice will go silent, but allow us to deal with this one. On page 19, this is new, Madam Chair. We approach this honourable committee on that premise. Page 19, after line 2, to insert. By the substitution for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. Now this paragraph A is in the Principal Act. Allow me very, it's short, and I will very briefly refer to it. It's section 60. Here it is, section 60 in the Principal Act. The minister may, these are the preceding words, and here is the portion, with the concurrence of the board, make regulations regarding. Madam Chair, with respect, if this provision would remain in the Principal Act, it might lead to a scenario where the Minister can be held ransom by the Board in making regulations if they can't find concurrence. Because concurrence, as we all know, is similar to in consultation, unlike after consultation. So please, we plead with the Honourable Committee, Madam Chair, that it is important that this amendment be effected and that it should read, not with the concurrence of, but after consultation with the Board. We're not suggesting for a moment that the Board should not be consulted, but once that consultation has taken place, the Minister should be in a position to take a stance and make the necessary. So please consider this, that one, Madam Chair.
In the Principal Act, then?
Yes. Okay. It is Section
16.
Of, yeah, of the, it is the enabling provisions empowering the Minister to make regulations. And those are the preceding words there. So no regulation can be made by the Minister without that concurrence. And we cannot guarantee that as a matter of course there will always be concurrence between the Board and the Minister.
Thank you very much. Can you get on to that point two on the ALS, please?
I may, if you wish, Madam Chair, there's not much substance there, but in item two, we can recall that the committee decided that an aggrieved applicant should have the power of review, but not an appeal. Review and appeal, we're looking in law at two different kind of remedies. It should only be review. So this is a consequential amendment to that decision. Item 3 is just the word and, I need not deal with that. On page 9, yes, Madam Chair, maybe I have not been fair. Let's reflect on item 4. On page 19 of our bill, after line 10, we are now in that section 60 in the Principal Act, empowering the Minister to make regulations, and this amendment proposes that these two enabling powers should be added to Section 60. So the Minister would be entitled to make regulations regarding what we have in C there, the period within which an application for a grant or recommendation of funding shall be finalised, and the last one, D, this is like a generic kind of thing, any other process relating to the application for grants or distribution of grants so as to facilitate efficient and effective distribution of grants.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I know we certainly have moved through that with speed. Now, members, you've got some homework there on the one issue here which you indicated you do have. One relates to points that were made yesterday with respect to the state organ of state, and the second and the third were new points for you to consider and to come back to us as the very first thing that you address tomorrow morning.
Chair, just a quick question on clause 32. Sometimes in other legislation that we've worked on, the phrasing is the minister shall, and then sometimes we include even a time period for the publishing of regulations. Is there a reason why we've made it discretionary with no time period in this legislation?
Madam Chair, just allow me to make a reference to the Principal Act, please.
Yeah.
and said, I've quickly reflected on the Principal Act. There's no time period stipulated in the context of the Principal Act. No.
No. If I may, Chair, I know I've got the Principal Act here. I'm just asking why not? Because in some other legislation that we deal with, it is mandatory, and there's a time period given.
Chair, I think if there is a proposal that it should be included, it may be included, but ordinarily would include something like that if it deviates from standard practice of 30 days notice period before final issuance. If it deviates from that, for instance, if we require more than we normally would say, but if it's the normal the process of doing regulations, then we do not do that.
I'm looking at time frames for the regulation. The issue is really, you know, sometimes you've got legislation, first degree legislation, which really is almost inoperative without the regulations, as you know. And at other times, one can begin to move with the legislation, but the regulations, those that refer directly to this, do need to be in place. Now, it does vary from a piece of legislation to another, and also just the complexity and the size of that legislation and the number of amendments that it is processing. So, you know, no thoughts on this as to that relationship. I know that you do have a Principal Act, and so you do have regulations in place which would need to be amended in order to comply with this, but it's not as if you're working with no regulations, am I right? You do have some in place already.
Chair, there are regulations that are currently operating, but obviously if these amendments are adopted, they would have to be amended consequentially.
James? Are we done with the time period issue?
Are you mean on regulations?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Madam Chair, if I can just make a comment on page 12, the clause 32.4d, it's a very clumsy sentence that presently reads, any other process relating to the application for grants or distribution of grants so as to facilitate efficient and effective distribution of grants. May I propose the following English for D to read? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sharing it with you.
Are you talking about what clause?
D.
32.
4D. Okay. If I can propose that it reads as follows, any other process that facilitates the efficient and effective application for and distribution of grants.
Any other process that
facilitates the efficient and effective application for and distribution of grants.
I've adjusted the actual sentence and syntax there. Right.
And I have a similar, going back to the very first page, you don't mind if I do this? Which is number one, clause one, number one. The very last line there of the part in the red, but not any department in the national or provincial sphere of government, is also very clumsy. And if I can just propose that it reads, shall not include national or provincial government departments. Shall not include national or provincial government departments.
Yes.
Now, we're just going to have a 3-minute break, please, because we've just got to do final issue, and then that should be very fast, seeing as you've all been talking. 3 minutes, please. Does help occasionally. Are we all here again? All on track? All right. Now, we've taken a position on this. All right? Honourable Hill Lewis? Taken a position on this already. All right? We know what we're doing with it. Not what we'd like to do, what we will be doing with it. Right. And that's addressed. You're going to get it by email from Mr. Hermans. Am I right, you know? And you've got the hard copy, have you not? Have you got the hard copy as well? Good. All right. Now, what I want you to do, we've had one or two changes to the A-list. Am I correct? Yes, just one or two little ones here in the certain mini amendments that the committee has suggested on these. I hope they've been taken into account. Yeah, good. So now it's a very easy one. We go through on this here and keep this alongside us, page by page, all right, on the clause. Very quickly now. Now remember, it really is the time, if we've overlooked anything, to raise your hand. Because we are coming to the final process now, please. You're not adopting, just moving through. Okay. Looking at our lab, it's dated now the 19th of September. And in that, is it pink? Yes, it is a kind of pink, yes. No, it's like the DDG's purse, yeah. It is what is called the Zodwar in Thule pink. Right. Page one of the A list. We're going now, clause one. Right, page one here on our main bill, one and two rather, two. Page three of the A list, of the bill, page three of the bill. Yes, DDG?
Doctor, I just wanted to make a comment on page one, on the definition of the distribution agency, on the proposal that the honourable member has made. I just wanted to propose that maybe we don't change it in that way, because it just opens up some interpretation issues in when I read it. If it says, but shall not include, it can never include anything. So it is not it. Yes, it is that, and it is not that. So I thought that it makes it much more clearer. Include might mean that there's a possibility to have it done elsewhere other than in that space.
Understand the state law advisors of the same opinion then. So let us leave it as it is in the pink. Right. Then we come to, that was clause one, clause two, clause three on page three, clause four. And that also includes page one of the A list, moving to two of the A list, but still on page three. Now, there were a fair amount of changes here, changes that reflected the deliberations yesterday. Right, all of those of you who were here yesterday? Right. That was page 2 of the A list, still on page 3 here of the bill. And moving to page 4 and 5 of the bill, 4 and 5 of the bill, 6 of the bill, clause 5 on the A list, which remained black, had been agreed to then. Clause 6 of the A list, well, clause 5 there, and moving to page 7 of the bill. Yes? Pardon? Well, when I see both hands up, I know I can move. Page 6 on page 8 here of the bill. Page 8, nothing there. Those were changes which we discussed yesterday and are now here. Clause 10. And on clause 10, we also move to page 9 of the bill. And there we've had huge paragraphs omitted. The principles of all of them were discussed and deliberated on yesterday. And, of course, for some time now, IS has been occupying us. But as we came to the end of the clauses, we will recall that we asked for the entire bill to be reviewed of that section and to straighten it out. And that came partly from yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis, and also from the Honourable Kwabasa as we moved in that direction. Page 10 of the bill, right, and looking at that there on page 10, we see clause 12, which again, these are the, we've had those provisions before, they're now all in black, and just looking here, even that one was resolved on the 13A, right, page 11. Page 11 of the bill and page, still on page 4 there, page 12 of the bill, page 12 of the bill, right. Page, while we're here on page 13, just want to remind members, every now and again, within on the A list, and I think I also just mentioned this to the department, we need to ensure that where we are needing to really consult the Principal Act in order to make sense of the amendment, that it's quite clear on the A list. I don't think it has to be like that for CREDA per se, but I think just for ourselves at the moment, perhaps it could be in green or something just at the moment so that we can do a quick reference there. And then clause 22 on page 13. Moving across very quickly to page 6 of the A list. And then also moving to page 14 of the bill. Clause 24. Now, I think Honourable Sring, you were... we clarified the numbering, as it were. That's been clarified in line with the Principal Act as well. And that is why, please, tomorrow morning, bring your Principal Act. Who doesn't have one? The Principal Act. It's very important that you do that. Bring the policy and bring the A list and the bill. All right, please. So that you've got all your documents here at, of course, 8 o'clock tomorrow. No. And we're now on page 14. We did all of that. We moved to, and the 9 was dealt with, page 15, and I don't recall too many things happening there, but on page 16, the bill, and page 7 of the A-list. Writing this Thursday night. We've dealt with the good cause issue, all right? Right. Page 16, and then again line 31, what have I got? That's the same point. Page 8 of the A-list, right, 26G. Yeah, and that also relates to the deliberations we've been having for the last 3 days now, doesn't it, Advocate Strydom? Those points which are now all rationalised and in the right clauses. Page 16, and then we have on page 17 of the bill, clause 27 there, very much the points that were made for some time now with respect to the distributing agency. Clause 28 on the same page. Page 18 of the bill and clause 29. Well, I mean, that actually started on page 17. Yeah, and went to 18. Same point again. Clause 30. When I say the same point, it's all to do with evaluate and adjudicate. Page 19 or page 18, you've still got that. Page 11 of the A-list, page 19 of the bill. You've got, just looking, well, it's actually page 18. The bottom of page 18, the clause rejected. Well, now it's repealed in a way because it's replaced. You've got the fresh amendment in. That the following be inserted as a new clause. And there it's very clearly of the Principal Act and the power of the minister. That's an important clause 31 there. And then we move to page 19 after clause 2 and insert that. Now I've got here section 60 of the Principal Act. And that's where it comes from. Is everyone on track with, you can see how important it is to bring in that Principal Act. All right, and there was a slight, syntactical suggestion here from Honourable James. I see the DDG's not here, but that related to 4D.
Chair, if I'm not mistaken, that one, I think, quite willing to take on board. That phraseology, as it is here, I think, as the Honourable Member quite correctly pointed out, is problematic. I've made my notes here to that effect.
Mr. Hermans, just explain the process tomorrow beginning at 8.
Chairperson, the committee will proceed with the being addressed by the DTR on the outstanding issues. Then the committee will probably do an principle agreement, a clause-by-clause agreement, whereafter we will prepare an A and B bill for the formal consideration by the committee, where members would be entitled to move any amendments for consideration by the committee at the time.
We're suggesting that the amendment which we do have proposed from the Honourable Hill Lewis is not put forward tomorrow, where it's in principle and it's going to CREDA, but it comes back when we've got the CREDA copy. Yes. Right. That's an A and a B bill. Just explain.
Chair, it will be an A and a B bill, and it does mean that after that process is complete, that no amendments can be made or accepted by the committee, which will mean that we will change the A and B bill if the committee makes further amendments.
Right. Now, I've also asked Mr. Hermans to have the revised program available for us, because it is our proposal that we get this back from CREDA. When is it? Next week sometime? Just explain that so that members...
Chair, it's the process of proofreading it, and the last exercise you had with the SEZ bill required more than 5-6 sets of proofs.
Yeah, I wasn't about to ask for the number of proofs, but what days affect that?
It means that we probably use the whole of next week to do the proofreading, and hopefully in the following week we should have a clean version of the bill.
So we are scheduled to meet
when? Scheduled to meet on the 3rd of October to deal with the bill.
All right. All right with everyone in that manner, and then that'll be lab. Do you want to just comment just in that area, Honourable Khadebi?
Thank you, Chair, because in our access to we have advanced so much that by taking this bill to the higher level, we can be able to consider it close by close when necessary. But I think that a lot of things were referred to the regulation in this. Yeah, they were referred to the regulations. I want a guarantee that those regulations, before they are proclaimed, they must come back to this portfolio committee first. I think that one we cannot allow it done by the department only.
So we are requesting the regulation to come back here. But now the other aspect is, although we've got LAB here, that's the Lotteries Amendment Bill, we need to also address the Legal Metrology Bill, which we've had, and I needed just that quick process outlined, because remember you are, you're hoping that this will all be drawn up in the program itself, and I think you have finalized that process for the legal metrology. Just indicate when that is starting, because I think that's the BRRR is also in the constituency.
Chairperson, we will also, besides the lab bill, we will deal with the NCC and the CIBC on the 3rd of October, and then we will do on the 4th of October, as part of the BRRR process, deal with SABS. With regard to the legal metrology bill, it's dependent on when it's introduced, but we started a scheduled public hearing starting from the 8th of October on the legal metrology bill.
And then with the National NCA, we'll begin to slot in.
We have scheduled for the NCA, depending if there's a need for further hearings, it depends on that. We will have a briefing on the 9th of October on the NCA bill. Mm-hmm. And then we have slot deliberations and on both bills until the end of the session. We also in the also slot in the consideration of the BRRR report over the 2-week period.
Right. And then the Thursday nights that are available, we have to look at...
We will consider the private members' bill of...
Any private members' bills we've got.
Yeah.
All right. This program will be made available in draft form tomorrow morning to everyone. Pardon? It's already beyond its shelf date. I know it may have been one day old. It's gone. It's come and gone. We've revised it. Okay. So that's exactly it. And we really, the way we work now, it should be quite a speedy process as I see it. And tomorrow, of course, we've got the DTI, is isn't it, coming in as the first part of the BRRR process. And I'm sure everyone there is on track. Right. Really, members, I know you've really been hard at it all day, and we do appreciate your time. It's 7:30, isn't it now? Isn't that right? And so we appreciate everything, and I think we're all tired. So do get home safely if you're driving.